This is learning departure, and this is for people who had to migrate when they were children. One, your tiny brown hands gripping brown and burgundy suitcases with gently packed memories, the sorrows will poke out of the seams. Only one stuffed animal toy will come with you. Escoge uno, Abuelita said. The rest, you tell them you will be back. You hide them under your bed, hoping they don't collect too much dust, too much resentment, becoming fragmented souls in the dark, like birds aching to fly with chipped wings, learning that they are not meant for the sky. Two, and you will land in a foreign airport. The suitcases never make it. With no belongings, you take it as a sign that you will never belong. Maybe you too are not meant for the sky, and you learn resentment.
Mi nombre es Sonia Kinyasaka. Vivo en los Estados Unidos. Vivo en Los Ángeles, pero crecí en New York. I am a migrant artist. I've been living in the United States since the age of 5, and for majority of it, I was undocumented, and I was able to adjust about 4 years ago, and still on that journey of figuring out what this all means. I think the best way to describe my journey is just like the word becoming. Like, I'm always becoming. I haven't arrived anywhere yet. I'm just always becoming and exploring that.
Este episodio tiene muchos umbrales. Está en el cruce de idiomas y tiene una traducción no sonora en línea que pueden leer mientras lo escuchan. Está en los bordes de ser niña, migrante, indocumentada, documentada. Está también entre la narración y la poesía. Sonia Guiñanzaca migró a Estados Unidos desde la provincia de La Suay, al sur de Ecuador, cuando tenía 5 años, para reunirse con sus padres que habían dejado el país a inicios de los años 90. Irse implicaba dejar atrás de sus abuelos paternos, Alegría y Cosme, y a un Ecuador del que quedan algunas impresiones potentes de su infancia. Sonia tiene el tatuaje de una grabadora boombox en su antebrazo derecho, aunque tiene que ver con crecer en la ciudad de Nueva York y cerca de la cultura del hip hop, a Sonia le recuerda Ecuador. Es la imagen de una radio prendida en una casa en Cumbe, en la provincia de La Suay. Le preguntamos a Sonia qué suena en esa boombox, la de su memoria y su tatuaje, para entender el vaivén entre la transformación y la nostalgia y el desconcierto de la experiencia migrante en la infancia. El sonido de esta grabadora tiene música, tiene recuerdos de risas, de encuentros familiares, conversaciones de la Sierra Ecuatoriana, en Harlem, en la ciudad de Nueva York, y tiene varios poemas. Soy Juliana Zambrano y esto es Crónicas al Borde.
Crónicas al Borde.
Cantar esta canción con mucho cariño de mi corazón a la República Dominicana.
Cuando yo era chiquita, I didn't have the opportunity to theorize or conceptualize migration. What I knew was my parents left me and I missed them, pero mandaban dinero o mandaban ropa y esa era la comunicación con mis padres. Mis padres decidieron, I'm not sure if it was like their dream to come to the United States and leave behind their home country or their family members, knowing that they may never be able to go back. But I think they made a hard decision to leave in the early 90s. And my father left first. My mother left after a year of giving birth to me, like 4 or 5 years later, they were able to save up all that money. And then they brought me into the United States. I came to know about the border through my parents or my family members when they told me, like, cruzamos la frontera. And to me, it's like, as a child, I'm like, what is this? Like, what is this big wall? Like, I grew up Catholic too, so I'm like, is this like a big giant wall going to the heavens? And then also later on seeing like Fox News and like Univision and or even CNN, the constant replay of like the video scenes of people like jumping over or crossing or whatever and hiding in the bushes of deserts. That's like my familiarity with like the border. But I don't have like the same familiarity. I came in a different way. I came by airplane. I didn't know what was happening. I just knew that I was getting a haircut, a similar haircut that I have around right now. I look exactly like how I came, which is very interesting. And I remember wearing my little overalls, which is something that I wear now too. And turtlenecks, which I wear now too. They tell me that I had to look presentable, that I had to, like, you know, follow instructions, that I had to, you know, hold the person's hand, who, you know, not get lost, but that I was gonna see my parents, and that I had a lot of questions. One other detail that I do remember of the flight is that my ears popped, like my ears were hurting. And I remember my flight had landed a little bit earlier, so my mom and my dad were not able to pick me up at the airport. They actually had to pick me up from the person I came with in Brooklyn. And I remember just sitting there. I was a little upset because my luggage got lost. They couldn't find my luggage. So whatever I had, the little things that I had was gone. And I was able to recognize my mom or understand her voice, but I did not recognize my dad. Then they took me to Manhattan, and I remember just like walking around.
Los recuerdos de Sonia sobre su partida a Estados Unidos no son muy claros y se amalgaman con los relatos de sus familiares y fotografías. Llega a la ciudad de Nueva York después de un vuelo del que solo se le había dicho que debía seguir instrucciones, portarse bien y permanecer callada. De su llegada a Estados Unidos en los 90 recuerda el dolor de oídos en el avión, los peluches que la recibieron y el collage de fotos en la pared de su nueva casa. Poco a poco empieza a aclararse la distancia de sus abuelos paternos, de la sierra ecuatoriana, del idioma. Y asimismo empiezan a aparecer los mecanismos para subsanarla. Las llamadas telefónicas de larga distancia y más tarde, la poesía.
Soy Quichua Cañari, nací en Cuenca, tengo familia ahí, tengo memorias de estar en Ecuador, pero migré a los 5 años, entonces no hay mucho de recordar. Entonces, I think for me, my parents did as much as they could to ensure that I had memories of my grandparents, on my dad's side, who still live in Cumbe. To remember the food, to remember some language, to find a way to stay connected, whether it's like getting the calling cards, you know, and then you get the numbers and you call back home. My artistry and my poetry for a long time when I was undocumented was trying to find a way to stay grounded and to remember and to fill in the gaps and to find a way to just hold on to everything, hold on to the smell of my grandmother, hold on to my childhood little memories, my teddy bears. And I think that now having papers, I'm trying to find ways to reconnect or rebuild my memory of Ecuador, to find a way to to fill in the gaps that are still like vague and opened.
Calling cards. One. Across oceans and land, working to connect one phone line with another. Like an umbilical cord, these 5, 10, 20 square cards are more than plastic. These calling cards have heartbeats. Two. We survived through phone lines, a cycle of dialing numbers. On the other line waited abuela. On the other line waited memories. On the other line waited birthday wishes that should have been given in person while eating guava cake. But we were here. And you were there. On the other line, we waited. By payphones, we waited. For your voice, we waited. That is all we had. My dad waited for you. He still does. Three. How do you dial a loved one when your fingers have worn out from weaving too many memories, when your voice has changed since the last time you saw them in person, your bones have broken from their absence, your lips have withered, your face is the only clue left of what they might look like now? Perhaps it's best not to look in the mirror. Perhaps you are too ashamed of holding on to old memories. Four. I can still hear Abuelita Alegría's voice. Abuelita, ¿cómo está Ecuador? Sí, sí, Abuelita, prometo que regreso. And then a long pause. You hear her shuffling the phone, trying to remember which side to talk from. She's not familiar with this technology. I call it old school. Some call it poverty. Abuelita's gentle voice rocks me back to memories of when she carried me as a baby. My face lays flat on her back. She hangs up and I lay gripping onto her words, trying not to let go. Never enough minutes. Five. Calling cards don't have heartbeats anymore. They just hang in the store teasing you. Now dad stops at the bodega for other reasons. His mouth curls up around the rim of the bottle, longing for one more conversation. I think he believes that with every beer, he gets closer to heaven, closer to her, closer to home. And secretly, I wish that was true. Six. The phone goes unused like the passport in my wallet. No more dialing. And his palms rest spaces where my grandma is buried. And even then, the lines on his hand restrict him from getting too close. Dad wants to hold my hand. But mostly, we look at each other, hoping to find comfort. He says that I look like abuela.
And I wasn't really surrounded by Ecuadorians. And it was like predominantly Caribbean migrants and it was predominantly Black American folks. And so it was just like, oh, okay, like this is not Ecuador. But I don't think like when I was little, I was like thinking like I've landed, I am in the United States. I think it was more like, oh, okay, like I'm with my mom and I can get McDonald's and I'm gonna go pick her up from the factory work, and my dad has a car, and I'm gonna, you know, go with him and drive. And then later on, my uncle joined, but most of my mom's family was already in the United States, and so it's like, oh, good, like everybody's here, we're all reunited. But I don't think I thought too much of it, and even now, I don't think you ever like really process this migration and the pain. It was really hard. Tenía un rencor, I think that's what you call it, like a resentment with my mom's family. Because all of her family were able to migrate. Most of her family, a majority of her family were able to migrate into the United States. And my dad's half of his family was able to relocate to Chicago. the majority of them passed away in Ecuador. Seeing my dad missing his parents, which are my grandparents, it landed more heavier on me, like the missing of them. My connection to like even my like indigenous identity is like heavily on like them, and it's such a loss that I've lost them, and that I wasn't able to go back. And it's also very comforting to know that, you know, his name is Cosme and I think of Cosmos, and then her name is Alegría and I think of joy and happiness. At a young age, I was carrying this baggage, maybe suitcases of like, oh my God, I should have brought this grandmother instead of this other grandmother. Or why did it have to be this grandma and not the other one? And it's like, that wasn't something for me to carry. That's the whole, like, that's a larger immigration. Like, that's like undocumented policies and all these different things. And I think that so many migrant children, so many young people carry such a burden of like, we have to make it in life because, you know, our parents gave us this, you know, American dream opportunity.
Sonia no solo tendría que lidiar a temprana edad con la ruptura que implica su migración a Estados Unidos, sino también con el lento proceso de entender lo que su migración significaba. Sonia no tenía papeles, al igual que sus padres, y con eso venían otra serie de complejidades que solo entendería paulatinamente. Por 21 años no pudo regresar a Ecuador, moverse con libertad, al igual que otras personas de su edad, e incluso que su hermano y su hermana nacidos en Estados Unidos. Entenderse indocumentada lleva a Sonia a otras reflexiones sobre su situación en el país y finalmente al activismo.
Mis primeras experiencias de injusticias fue a ver a mis padres en diferentes trabajos y la forma en que los bosses los trataban. Sometimes they wouldn't get paid. There would be a lot of bad work experience. It wasn't safe. And so one of the things that I realized was that, oh, my parents are migrant. They can't advocate. Because if they were to bring up like the police, or if they were to bring out, try to find a way or fight a case against the workers, they're undocumented. And so the fear was real. So I noticed a lot of that happening. I also lived in New York City. So there was police brutality, racism, other forms of anti-immigrant things happening across our communities and across the country. I think that I didn't understand like the absence of papers, and we'd like call it papers, and then like I thought in my mind it was like certificate or something, which is was funny because I collected all my certificates from first grade to like junior high school, and my mom has a big black binder and all of them are there. It's like perfect attendance and participation, and I was like, if I can get the most and as many as possible, this can prove how worthy I am of existing and like how good I am, and maybe they'll give me papers, you know. I didn't understand the system. I thought you just showed how you are a good citizen of the world. But I remember the first time that it was like, I think it was in middle school or maybe in high school, when we had the opportunity to go to Canada. And I was like, Mom, like, I want to go, you know, like I said, I have the good grades. And my mom was like, you can't go. And I'm like, why? So I think that's when I understood my mobility of like, oh, I can't go because I don't have papers. And then I think maturing later on, applying to jobs in high school, you get your worker papers as a high school student. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna apply. And my mom is like, you can't because you don't have a social security number. And so I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna get a summer job now. And then now it was becoming like, okay, my wages and my payments and like how I'm gonna make a living is gonna be like impacted. And then it was like applying to colleges when it like it hit me. Because I'm like, I've been waiting, my paper's got to come by next week, because then I have to apply for college, and they never did come during that time. And I think that's when it was like very apparent to me, like I didn't have papers. And while everybody else was thinking about their prom, graduation dresses, I also was trying to do that and enjoy it. But in the back of my mind and like in the back of all of that, I was like, oh shit, like where am I gonna go for college? What about all those scholarships? I was number 5 in my class. I worked so hard. This is not just about not being able to get like a summer job. This is now like I can go to college. What is the future? Would I have to marry? How do I marry if I'm not even dating? Like I don't even have a boyfriend. I haven't kissed anybody yet. And how do I also give my parents papers? And so like all of that, then that led to my activism.
I don't know how many of you are familiar with Dunkin' Donuts, but America runs on immigrants is usually like the slogan in the commercials is like America runs on coffee. And so I just switched it around to say America runs on immigrants. My mother works on the 23rd floor of a glass building in the middle of Times Square as a server of a catering company. My father rides the train home from work in his backpack. He carries a pair of Tims with blotches of oil. Neither of them have eaten. The thing about America is that migrant workers go days without properly eating so that America can function. My mother, who goes by Maggie, will stand for 8 hours straight, bouncing on the balls of her feet to catch any demands by white professionals that for some reason know how to work a Google Drive but have no idea how to make their own coffee. My father, who goes by Segundo, ironically, is always first to cook, first to burn his hands, first to serve, first to deliver so that men in suits can get their rush lunch order. My mother and father never get days off or paid holidays or bonuses or 401k or health care. My mother and father depend on the power of Vicks, hot tea, and prayers to La Virgen. Sometimes my father and mother do not feel like mine. They feel like they belong to this country. My mother does not see father. My father does not see his brother. My siblings don't see mom or dad. America sees them at all time. America sees our parents more often than we do. At 4 a.m., 7 p.m., 11 p.m., and midnight. My 9-year-old brother claps his tiny brown hands to pray, Diosito, please take care of mom. My father carries our old school photos in his wallet, folded gently not to crease our faces. This is how he looks after us. This is how he holds on to us. My mother carries a large purse with all of our documents because, just in case. They both accommodate America's routines by moving around birthdays and bautismos and weddings. America is a spoiled brat wanting more and more and more and more. America screams, go back to your country. Stop stealing our job. And simultaneously whines, where is my lunch?
The moment of agency, which is like when I decided to be an activist and like really be in the face of the government and like protest and wear my shirts, you know, disclosing my immigration status and doing all these actions. I feel like that's so present because it's a reminder and I want to remind myself always of like the agency and the power that I had over myself. But there's like so much more there that I think that as an activist, as somebody who's migrant, we are conditioned and we're told to just think of our lives in association to our immigration status. But there's so much that happened around that. I was married, I had my artistry, I was in college, I was an activist in college too, outside of like immigration. I was in plays, I used to play soccer. There's so much there that I often wonder that my incline to always retell my story of those 21 years is about me being undocumented. That is also maybe not, that in a way that I'm following along this like colonial government and so forth, like, you know, of thinking about migrants and like one specific narrative. Our goal is not to struggle. Our goal is to have better lives and to live and get liberated. But our goal is not to like always stay stuck in the struggle. And so when I like finally got to the point, and when I also noticed that my parents were getting older, that's when my then partner decided to for him to petition for me, and it worked. And then my green card came in the mail, and then it came in an envelope that says "Welcome to America," and I'm like, I'm already in America, bitches, like, what the fuck? And there's a poem in there, I think it's in there. No, it's in the book Colonize This, that I'm like, I want to tell you, like, I want to tell the reader that when I got that envelope and it says "Welcome to America," that I ripped it and like threw it in the garbage and put it on fire. But that's not what I did. I have it still saved with my mom and all her collections of paperwork. I think when I saw my parents getting older and they were still working and they still didn't have healthcare and they like all of these things were happening, I think that was the moment where I'm like, okay, like I have to think about what is my actual commitment into this movement? How do I also take care of my family? How do I let go of the shame that may come with having papers? Because a lot of, we're fighting for as like undocumented people and coming out undocumented people that at some, like there's a moment that happens that only becomes our identity. And letting go of that identity seems so vulnerable and seems so scary. Like if that's all we know, that moment of trajectory, and a lot of the times we don't talk about that moment of adjustment. There's a lot of pain that happens when you transition out of an immigration status. Although that's like so common, like a person can go from temporary protective status into something different, or seeking asylum and adjusting in a particular way. There's not manuals, there's no books, there's no like lengthy things. There's scholarship and academic stuff, but there's no like very personal things that I think that is so scary. And also, there was a moment of like, okay, who am I? What is my community? I also had to move back from a lot of those spaces that it was like by undocumented people, because I do believe that it has to be run by undocumented people. I'm still trying to figure out who I am, and that's just in the relationship in the United States. I don't know, like I'm still exploring what it means for me, my relationship to Ecuador now that I can travel. My first time going back, I thought like, I've come back to the motherland, to like, this is my home, you know? And then it's like, oh, here's the American. And I'm like, American, you know, I'm coming from the United States where I'm not seen as an American. And so now to be in Ecuador, and then everybody's like, oh, that's the American. And I'm like, what?
Ese salto entre no tener papeles y finalmente tenerlos le hace pensar a Sonia en la posibilidad de existir en los cruces, entre la construcción constante y la nostalgia, entendiendo al cuerpo como un espacio de resistencia frente a políticas que niegan, excluyen o silencian.
There's no going around. My body is here. Like when you see me, you see this. You see I'm brown. You see, you know, I'm 5 feet. You hear my accent. You know, you're going to see probably me with my partner, you know, who's another queer person. So I think anywhere I walk into, anywhere in the space that I'm into, as a poet, as an artist, as a writer, I feel like, although it's tiring at times, it is a place of resistance at all times. I can't negotiate it. I can't like take my head off and no longer be queer or no longer be femme or no longer be migrant. I'm always constantly that. And so I think that's always in communication and collaboration with like the poetry and the way that I perform, my activism, being somebody undocumented and doing civil disobediences was like a political statement of saying, you know what, like this government, this legislations are not going to stop us. We're human beings. We're humane. And so, yeah, my body is a place of resistance, is a place of where I can show my agency. I can decorate it however I want, whether it's like my white eyeliner or tattoos. It's a place of rest and a place where my activism starts, because this is like, we can negotiate that. Everyone is still trying to figure it out. And I think it's nice to be nostalgic and to be becoming. It's like a soft and tender space. It's a way to exist rather than being forced to be one fixed thing or have an understanding of something very fixed. And I think that that's like the softness that we can offer like migrant communities, instead of, I think, this like limbo, which is real. I think like in becoming and nostalgia, there's a little bit more agency and there's a little bit more reflection and there's a little bit more love. And limbo feels like the person is gone and it's just like a matter of like legality or something.
This one, I wanted to write for my mom and for other queer women, other femmes, other trans femmes, non-binary people, and say I'm a glory. So I'm going to share with you, and yeah. Glory. Mi mamá se levanta. A las 7 de la mañana se baña, sus pies bendecidos en agua, es divina. Después, empieza con su maquillaje. Her brown hands gently holding the black eyeliner. For a migrant woman, these are lines she welcomes. She places her dark brown hair in a bun, carefully placing bobby pins, like carefully placing lipstick, like carefully placing hope on land. Mommy's knowledge teaches me that my wings are meant to be thick, meant to take up space. These are rituals I grew up with, so I repeat. Every morning, creating self into existence, between lipstick and softness, between borders and belonging, these are ways I survive, so I repeat. Arching my eyebrows, jewelry over my neck, red nails pointy enough to hold homes. Homes I am building, homes I left, so I repeat. Adorning all of my genders like the gospel never sung at my church. This becomes biblical. Let this be an ode to femmes of color, whose celestial eyeshadows crack the heavens, whose thick thighs resurrect possibilities. So I repeat, what glory we incite, what glory we create, what glory we fucking are.
Gracias a Soneña Saca por la poesía y su generosidad. Este episodio fue producido entre enero y mayo 2021 por Daniela Dávila Navarrete, Juliana Zambrano Murillo y la iniciativa Arte y Activismos de la Universidad San Francisco de Quito. El guión es de Juliana Zambrano Murillo, la edición de sonido de Nicolás Schwarzberg, la postproducción y diseño sonoro de José Rafael Subía Valdés. La ilustración que lo acompaña es de Sergio Silva. En nuestra página web crónicasdelborde.com pueden encontrar la traducción de algunos fragmentos de este episodio y del poema Glory, que lo cierra. Esta temporada cuenta con el apoyo de la Universidad San Francisco de Quito y del Instituto de Fomento a la Creatividad y la Innovación de Ecuador. Gracias por escuchar.
And I kept thinking about my abuelita Alegría, who passed away before I was able to get papers, and so a lot of my poems are to her. She's my dad's mother. So, and it starts with a quote by Novalis Bulawayo. And it goes, we could not attend their funerals because we still had no papers. And so we mourned from afar. We shut ourselves up and turned on the music so we did not raise alarm. Writhed on the floor and wailed and wailed and wailed, and with our grandparents gone, we told ourselves, we have no home anymore. Who would we go to see in that land we left behind? A quote by Novalis Bulawayo. Questions for Alegría in Puerto Rico. Woke up early to catch the sunrise at the beach. Spoke your name, Alegría. Sat on the sand watching the skies crack and mend, the most elegant of peaches and pinks, and there the sun poked out, Alegría. I ask, how do you start rituals? How do you call in ancestors? Alegría. No answers yet. There's a coqui singing to the wind. I'm left to look at the crashing waves, waiting for a manual, a way to call you, to get your attention, a way to grieve you. Alegría. Can I speak your name this loosely? Can I hold your name in my tongue, even if scattered in my mouth? Or is this reserved for nietas you raised in person? What happens to us, the granddaughters who migrate? I thought about your son, my dad, and a gray Honda van. He used to take me to Coney Island and New Jersey beaches, the ones he used to drive for his newspaper route before it was stolen. He loved to swim deep in ocean. Alegría, I watched him closely out of jealousy. He was a good swimmer. Alegría, I watched him closely out of fear. Still a brown man with no health insurance in America. Alegría, while in ocean, tell me if he called out your name. Parting the water in his arms, was he reaching for you as he swam? Was this his way of drowning his memories of you? Was he trying to keep you afloat? I never saw him pick up seashells. Alegría, I thought about your home in Cumbe, not near an ocean. Did you ever get to see an ocean? Are you more of a river type of person? There's a picture of you, Abuelito Cosme, Señora María. At my baptism, you held my hand. You with red pollera and purple blouse, gentle face, skin-toned stockings. Alegría. I bet you remember more about this day. Alegría. I found a bunch of tiny seashells, some cracked, others just quite right. Like my learning to call you back to life, I called out your name this morning, not in sadness, but in jubilation. Dozen crashing waves hugging my body. Alegría. Meet me again in the shore.